I was talking to a buddy of mine. We've been friends for damn near 30 years. We were the two dudes in high school with the techniques. We were DJing and whatnot, and we used to dig in the crates. And so thinking back on the raucous days and all that stuff. And, you know, he said something to me that I found interesting that I agree with too. Like, if we were looking at the rosters, you know, the sound bombing and all that, when we were spinning, it was like, not because of talent, but you wouldn't have thought that RA would have been the guy now 30 years later with the longevity, the catalog, and still in good shape, making dope music. What do you attribute your longevity to and the space that you're in now, which seems to be a really good space?
Yeah, I was better in all of them.
You know, Stanley Kubrick was the one that we would always drop. Like,
yo, reverb. Yo, I feel that bass line, cat.
Reverb. Well, Stanley Kubrick was the one that I freestyled. We made that beat at like 3 a.m, my boy Cap, and we played it at Raucous, like not even trying. And they were like, yo, can we buy that for sound bombing? I'm like, that one? Sure. And then, you know, it turned out to be a record that people love all around the world for years and years and years. So, you know, 20-something, 25 years late almost.
After 6,000 inquiries, emails, phone calls, I appreciate you joining us, man.
Sorry. Yeah, you know what it is? Like I said, I'm just my own manager, and I'm a mess.
I hear you.
Yeah, well, yeah. So like a lot of people think it's because who do you think you are? You can't get back to me.
Nah, fuck that. The legends get a pass, man. I appreciate your message, man.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, I don't try to be that guy. I try to be on point, but a lot of times I get lost in messages, and because I need to get a regular ass assistant just to handle, hey, here's your schedule for Monday.
I hear you. Well, it's funny. Initially, it was brought to my attention, I guess, by a firm or someone that was working with you, maybe right when the last album dropped, All My Heroes Are Dead. And they kind of sent me an email. I was like, hey, we thought maybe, you know, your boxing side and your, you know, you're sprinkling in hip hop here and there would be interesting for you to talk to RA. And I'm like, fuck yeah, like that would be dope.
And they didn't make it happen.
Yeah, and then they didn't make it happen. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. And so we scheduled one time, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I forget the guy's name. I have it in my head. But he was like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, the times got mixed up. Let's try to. And so it was one of those, just like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
So even when I do have somebody, I'm still fucking.
Yeah, that's his one job, was to schedule.
Yeah, and it's weird because that was when COVID was kind of going down, lockdown.
Exactly.
So I was here. It wasn't like if I was on tour and wasn't around, I can understand it.
But we're here, man. That's the most important thing. I appreciate, like I said, your time. Welcome to the RBR Recap presented by Round Boxing. Today, we're joined by hip-hop legend, boxing aficionado, super fan, historian, I would say, as well, RA the Rugged Man. And actually, for today, we're coming fresh off of the Immortal Technique interview that I did as well, which was super dope. So we're renaming the broadcast and the podcast. Instead of it's Round by Round Boxing, we're going to call it All My Heroes Are Podcast Guests. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I got the week to write because my kids are in Croatia on vacation. So I'm just trying to get all my work done nonstop. So, you know, they get back on Saturday, and after that, they'll be jumping on my back and my head and going crazy. All day. So,
I imagine it's tough. It's funny. I saw a video. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Odyssey, the hip hop artist, but he's carrying like his baby in his arm. His other one's doing like backflips, and he's trying to spit a verse. And I'm like, the life of a parent and a hip hop artist is crazy.
Yep.
A lot of good music still be putting out there. So if nobody's up on Odyssey, check him out. But obviously we have the legend himself, RA, here. So I got to jump right into some music stuff. I know you said, you know, living now abroad, it's kind of hard to keep up with the day-to-day in boxing and, you know, all the cards and whatnot. So we'll touch a little bit on that and, you know, kind of the history of stuff. And but also what's going on in the music scene, what you're working on, all that good stuff. But
boxing, the only issue is, I know when you die hard, you know, every fight, every name, you know, I was like that for the first 40 years of my life. It's just when my daughter was born, I moved to another country. The last few years is the last, you know, the first time ever in my life where I'm not up on every single nook and cranny of every fight, every title. And, you know, the first 40 years of my life, I could tell you every champion that had every title and every, you know, four belts. Right. Here. Like I knew every single one and what day, what fight was going to be. And now I'm just kind of, you know, historically I know a lot, but the current stuff, like I know the basics of what's going on right now, you know, so.
Definitely. Yeah. And we've seen you obviously comment, you know, when we put stuff up, you could hold your own, obviously verbally spar all the time on Instagram and whatnot. So yeah, we'll touch a little bit on that, but I wanted to get it started with, I was talking to a buddy of mine. We've been friends for damn near 30 years. We were the two dudes in high school, with the techniques. We were DJing and whatnot, and we used to dig in the crates. And so thinking back on the raucous days and all that stuff. And, you know, he said something to me that I found interesting that I agree with too. Like if we were looking at the rosters, you know, the sound bombing and all that, when we were spinning, it was like, not because of talent, but you wouldn't have thought that RA would have been the guy now 30 years later with the longevity, the catalog, and still in good shape, making dope music. What do you attribute your longevity to? And the space that you're in now, which seems to be a really good space.
Yeah, I was better than all of them. I was better than all of them.
You know? Stanley Kubrick was the one that we would always drop. Like,
yo, Reverb. Yo, I feel that bass line, cat. Reverb.
Well, Stanley Kubrick was the one that I freestyled. We made that beat at like 3 a.m, my boy Cap, and we played it at Raucous, like not even trying. And they were like, yo, can we buy that for sound bombing? I'm like, that one? Sure. And then, you know, it turned out to be a record that people love all around the world for years and years and years. So, you know, 25 years late almost. It's still, no, it is 25 years. Maybe the album dropped 99, but they were playing that on Stretch and Bob around 97, 98, I guess.
Yeah.
So damn near 25 years later, I still got to do that record in other countries. But I find different ways to flip it. A lot of times, I'll have somebody beatbox on stage and do it because, you know, it's so tired to me. And, or I'll have like, if legends are in the building, I'll have them come out and bust rhymes on it or whatever, you know, or even like a new artist, like, yo, you think you're dope? I'll throw in a Stanley Kubrick beat, you know?
Oh man, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, shout out to my guy, Hunter. That's my boy from back in the day. Like I said, we used to dig in the crates and stuff. And, he was the only one that could match my intensity. I was like, guess who I'm going to interview? And, you know, we're both parents now, you know, older. And he's just like, yo, we got into that teenage
mode. How old are your kids?
Super excited. My son will be 9 on Sunday. And my daughter's 20. She's in college.
You started early. You look like a baby.
Yeah, man. Jasmine and my son, Lucas. Well, I know you have two kids, right?
Hey, your son's a pain in the ass, right? Kids, boys in trouble.
Oh, of course. And he's a Leo. He's a few days before me, man. He's something else, man. He's something else.
My son's great, but he's an obnoxious, crazy fuck like his dad. Where my daughter is kind of like, you know, she's a little intelligent and thinks about it before she jumps face first into a fucking table, you know?
Yeah, so, I hear you.
Are we allowed to curse on the show?
Yeah, of course, man.
All right, I always start off and say a curse or two by accident and go, wait, can we?
Yeah, like, no, I appreciate it. Yeah,
same thing I do every interview, and it's not on purpose, but I realize, like, wait, are we doing the curse
work? I appreciate it. No, we could talk freely, and definitely when the kids come up, man, it makes you want to cuss sometimes. But I mean, like, the longevity, the music, is it just as fun now, you know, for you as it was back in the day? I mean, obviously you're decades and decades deep in.
Well, it's more fun now because it wasn't fun then, you know. The most fun it ever was when I was a kid, you know. You're 12, 13, 14, 16, and there's no business involved. So your whole thing was a competitive sport, going from, you know, house party to street corner, just rapping against dudes and just being so dope at it that you're getting attention and you're like, I love doing this. I love it. You know, and you love getting in the studio and meeting, you know, people with beats and my producer Niles, and, you know, you loved it. There was nothing unlikable about it. It was just the greatest time. And then once you get in bed with the industry, you go, oh, this is like the music. The fun in the music is only like a small portion. You got to deal with like terrible people every day of your life, you know? So I couldn't handle that very well at first. You know, I was like, I don't even need to be in this. I don't even need to make me, I'll do shows. I don't need to deal with that shit, you know? So you know. But now the years go by and the internet kind of where like I could do everything myself and I don't really have to be in bed with anybody, you know. Yeah. So and if I did my business better, yeah, I'd be making more money. If I was in bed with more devils, I'd be doing a little bit better. But you know, I do things at my pace and do it my way, and it's kind of a blessing, you know, because I am able to go do shows and make a living and make the exact art and music I want to make. But yeah, so it's more fun now than it was in the 90s for me. In the 90s, I really hated it. Like I hated it, you know.
Yeah, and I think you've said that, you know, on recent tracks, I'm probably more than one, but you know, I do it my way. And that's got to be fun too, you know, and for the fans to appreciate that, which we obviously do, being able to do things your way and create your art the way you want. And, you know, the internet lets you facilitate, you know, on different platforms and things like that and really give it to, you know, with the videos and things like that. I think that's super dope. And your creativity really
shines.
That's
another business now. That's another business now. Yeah. It's like, because my YouTube channel has controversial, you know, stuff on it. The algorithm's kind of, you know, a little funny,
right?
You know, because, well, and it's not just, you know, political, which it is political too, because when I dropped the Immortal Technique video, they like said that, you know, we got all these letters from YouTube and they said they couldn't put it here and there and wouldn't run ads on it because they said it has it, you know, it was promoting voter fraud and the insurrection. I'm like, we wrote that song a year and a half before the insurrection, you know, I mean, fucking idiots. But, and we shot the video before the insurrection, but we edited it, finished it, and we dropped it, and they blocked it. And then there was little things like that. And there's also blood in it. There's curse words in it. There's, you know, like we did a video called Dragon Fire with Coogee Rap and Ghostface Killer, Master Killer. And the director and producer really put a lot into it. And we put it on my channel and, you know, the algorithms keep it where we go. And then another channel, South Central, man, big up to these guys because they did two of the videos. They did a remix to the Immortal Tech and threw like a Nas Method Man mashup. It got like 4.5 million views. And then, nice. And then they did Dragon Fire. They just edited random clips into the real video. And the thing's almost like 1 million views in a month. Because their channel's clean and they, you know, they make sure that they, you know, they take the guns out, they take this out. So,
yeah.
So you think, you know, in the beginning of the internet, it was like, hey, whatever we want to do. But now it's not that anymore too, because that's corporate, you know?
Yeah. It's regulated and yeah, definitely. Yeah. That, you make a good point. And actually, obviously, you know, if we're looking for RA content, yeah, YouTube is going to be one of the first places you go, especially if you want visual stuff. Yeah. And so,
but like I said, the we put out the exact same video, except mine is the better one with the real actors and the real everything. And they put out one with a new edit with the, you know, the violence out of it a little bit. And it got double the amount of views in a month. You know, so it's almost like, wait, maybe I shouldn't even put stuff on my channel and just put it on other people's channel.
Right.
But
yeah.
Then your channel don't grow. But you know, if they're not letting my channel grow, it might be the answer is just throw my product on other people's, you know, because a video is there as an advertisement to let people know your music's out. You
exactly.
Know?
Exactly. I got to touch on something that you said a moment ago about, you know, people asking you to do Stanley Kubrick and stuff like that. Are there songs? I think a lot of times fans don't realize this, but I got to hang out one time after a Roots show with the guitar player that they had at that time, this dude named Ben Kenny. And he would tell me that this was way after, I think it was like after Things Fall Apart maybe. But so he would say that people in the crowd would be like, we want to hear Pass the Popcorn from like Organics from the first album. And they'll be like, man, we're not playing Past the Popcorn. That shit's like from, you know, whatever, 15, 20 years ago. And we have a whole other set and like people will get upset. And so like, do you have songs like that? Because I'm obviously you can't perform every fucking song that you've ever done.
That's always the problem. That's always the problem. I could do a 90-minute set and literally do pieces of three or four decades. Like I'll do stuff from the early 90s to 2022. Mm-hmm. You know, to make sure every, you know, cause you know, there are old heads in the crowd. So you right. want to give them, you know, something from the early 90s. And then there is young people that just heard of you from the new album.
Yep.
So you want to give them, and plus your new album's out. So you want to, you know, and people have been to your show before. So you want to do a lot of new album. So the people who've been to your old show get new stuff as well, you know, but so I try to do little things of each. But no matter what it is, there's always going to be somebody that comes up to you and be like, yo, why didn't you do this song?
Right.
I literally did like pieces of 30 effing songs.
Yeah.
Like, and you're still going to come at me like, why didn't you do it? But that's what it is. People love what they love. And, you know, you make so many songs, you know, and some people might have been introduced to you by this one and somebody might have been introduced to that one, you know, and like there's songs that I will never do live that people like, you know, WWF Aggression, you know, mm-hmm. It was just like, it was the Chris Jericho theme song, but it sold a million copies. It was platinum. And, you know, yeah, break the walls down. And the rhyme was just like, I'll break you, take, you know, they told me like, no gun talk, no curses, no wrestling moves. They gave me all these rules and like, it was supposed to be violent. So I was just having fun with it.
Yeah.
But like, still people be like, yo, the first thing I ever heard you was WWF or like, a Tony Hawk soundtrack, a Tony Hawk video game that sold like 8 million copies, or I don't know, maybe more. It was like a big Tony Hawk video game, and I had a song on that. And people be like, you should have did. I'm like, I should have did a Tony Hawk video game. You know, ran like I don't even know one word to that thing. You know, but
right. They grew up that's the thing too.
Video game. A lot of times, you could tell the age of who your fan is by what they ask for too. You know, when they be like, you know, can you do that? You know, some people bring up like my demo tape stuff, like, yo, what the fuck, you know? Or like, you tell the age, like, and people go, oh, this was the bootleg era. This was the old Jive Records era. Mm-hmm. This is the 12 inch. They'll be like, do 50,000 head, do Smith Abel more. Like, okay, they was on some Stretch and Bob type shit, you know? And then you kind of just keep track of who's from where. And then, oh, do the Jedi Mind Trick chick stuff. Okay, that was the mid 2000 fan, you know, and then when Legend Never Die came out, you know, people were like, yo, I never heard of you till Hobson or this and that or Tech N9ne, you know, so it's all different age groups of who discovered you where and when. And, you know, that's a good thing about longevity, though, you know, I had my peers that were in the 90s that would have like a big, huge record on Hot 97 and the whole world was singing that one song, you know? And literally, you know, sometimes they'll go and open for me somewhere or we're on the same bill together or whatever. And they're only known for that the one song, you know? So they're doing a whole set. Nobody really gives a fuck or knows any of the music, but they're waiting for that one song. So I never had that big explosive one song on the radio or label backing me up and pushing it or this or that. So I'm blessed to have like decades of different material that people know all of it or some of it from here and there, you know? So rather I would really hate to be like, yeah, and some of those guys who have them one big songs, they do the song twice in a set of three.
Like, yeah, right, no, because that's all they have. They got to go back to the same trick.
So it's like, you know, and honestly, I'm not saying it's a bad thing either, because imagine you made a song that was so impactful that you don't even got to have any other impact and you could still make money off it for 20 years after, you know, 30, you know, so that's a blessing as well, you know, so.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's funny, kind of transition into another question I had now moving a little bit into boxing. I heard a recent interview with Paul Spadafora, one of my favorite boxers, coming up watching him. He's a slick dude. And they were asking
him. So much trouble, man. He was an undefeated fighter. He shot his girlfriend, all of that stuff, right? Yeah. The thing a lot of people said he was beating up Floyd in the gym even and sparring.
That was going to be my question for you. So he got kind of upset when the host or co-host brought up like, you know, people know you for the Floyd Mayweather sparring. And he's like, man, you know, he's kind of like, fuck that. I don't want to be known for that, you know? And I understand, you know, when you came up, had a great career and, you know, there's other things and whatnot. So
undefeated for what? 30 fights? Yeah. 36 fights? I don't really know the record. But
yeah, I think he got into his late 30s or early 40s in terms of number of fights that he was undefeated. But yeah, but so a lot of people may only know him because of that. I think some people, and I've been told too, when, you know, we're kind of just talking boxing or hip hop or whatnot, and they're like, oh yeah, Ari's that guy that got into it with Floyd Mayweather. So they know you from that. Does it ever bother you? Like if people only know you from a certain walk or.
No, because that's, you know, when somebody's as famous as Floyd or like same thing, like people, oh, you did a song with Biggie, you know, it's like, you know, when somebody's, you know, Biggie was doing songs with Michael Jackson, he became one of the most famous humans in music history and Floyd became one of the famous boxers ever. So No, like that's what happens when you interact with somebody. And it's always a blessing because, you know, because Floyd called us that time. It was out of nowhere. Like, I didn't tell him, like, hey, can I get an interview? He was
right.
annoyed that we weren't, like, kissing his ass on the radio saying great things about him, because I guess everybody was saying great things about him. So he was like, yo, fellas, what's up? And he thought we were like, hey, what's up, dude? Yo. You know, but I already had known Floyd. Like, I'm not supposed to talk about that, but yeah, I got him in a bunch of magazines. And, you know, there was a time when I was helping, because boxing, you know, wasn't in the 2000s, wasn't getting a lot of crossover, you know, press. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the black fighters, especially, you know, it was like, you know, Oscar got some mainstream, but a lot of black fighters, you know, just to do basic stuff like Source Magazine or this and that. And so, a lot of the publicists would hit me up and say, hey, RA, you know, so I'd get, you know, Bernard Hopkins and King Magazine. I'd get Winky Wright and Rides and you know, okay. I'd get, you know, when Danny Williams beat Tyson, the source was like, do you know him? I said, yeah, I could get Danny for you. I didn't know him, but like, who was it? Was it Kelly? One of his publicists had him in New York doing a press tour for a fight. So I said, yeah. Kelly, I think it was Kelly. It might not have been Kelly Swanson, but
you know, Kelly Swanson.
Yeah, a lot of the publicists would hit me up. Well, even not even just black fighters. When Klitschko's were in town, they called me and said, hey, you know, can you get Klitschko anything? I said, and my boy worked for Street Soldiers on Hot 97. So I said, would they want to do a radio show on Hot 97? It's, you know, it's the biggest station in New York. So she was like, hell yeah. So I called my man Tone and we brought the big Klitschko brothers up to Hot 97.
That is, you know, like,
so wow. I was doing, you know, so I was kind of known in that world from just being the rapper guy that kind of had connects with the press, you know, the cool press, you know?
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I never knew that. But when I heard you and the whole radio thing with Floyd, my brother's like, do you know that guy? Like, that's going at it with Floyd. And I'm like, yeah, that's fucking the Rugged Man. What do you remember from that time? I mean, like, from that, maybe that discussion or argument, or, you know, I remember it had something to do, you know, him like not fighting Paul Williams and Margarito, I think, something like that, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was fan guy gets the guy on the phone and you, hey, fight the bigger guy, fight Paul Williams, fight Margarito. Hey, why? You know, that's all it is.
Okay.
You know? And in all honesty, Floyd was a smart guy. You know, he was about his business. And I'm I come from an era watching fighters that fought everybody. That was the toughest challenge to make sure that they could. Where Floyd was like, you know what? I come from an era where we make the most money. We fight the least reward, the biggest reward for the least threat. You know, and that's what he did. And okay, this is a threat. But it's going to be a big reward. Okay, this is a threat. You know, fighting Margarito or Paul Williams, they weren't huge household names. They weren't, you know, so he started, and that continued in boxing today. That's how they still do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was kind of like the big guys fight the, you know, hey, this guy's one, this guy's two. We're all fighting each other, you know. But then people would say, hey, but Sugar Ray didn't fight, you know, Aaron Pryor and Julian Jackson wasn't able to fight this guy, you know. So
there's always going to be a guy.
But if you really want to go there, you know, Floyd and Pacquiao fought when they were like, what, mid-30s? And if you want to go there, you know, Sugar Ray and Hearns, they fought when they were in their 20s. And, you know,
first fight, yeah.
When they had the rematch, everyone was like, who's these old guys? And they were still younger than Floyd and Pac, you know?
Right. Just a completely different era. And the amount of weight classes like that, when you look at Duran, you know, where he started, you know, lightweight, considered probably the greatest lightweight ever, to go up and compete with like Marvin Hagler at middleweight, you know, regardless of if you want to, I mean, it's ridiculous, all of those weight classes.
But that's the problem too, is the casuals, don't know the history of Roberto Duran.
Right.
They look at it like, oh, that's the guy that quit against Sugar Ray, and it's exactly. The guy that got knocked out by Hearn. It's like, no, but you don't understand. He was like the scariest monster beast lightweight that you've ever seen for years and years and years. And then he went up and did all of this stuff, you know, and beat Barkley and these guys like that. You know what I mean? Like, he was still, and was competitive with Hagler.
Hagler, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So, which, you know, that's the thing with Floyd fans. They always kind of let him off the hook. Like, hey, why don't you go beat Sergio Martinez or Golovkin? And like, Floyd's not big enough. But like, you know, the guys that said, hey, I'm the greatest of all time, they would go up and fight the middleweights and the right. and the big guys, you know?
So. Yeah. And when you talk about tough guys, I mean, that's why Mike Tyson has said on more than one occasion, his hero, the guy he looked up to was Duran, because Duran was the baddest dude. He was the meanest, the toughest. He was the one holding a tiger, taking picture. You know, a lot of what Tyson did was based off of what Duran did. He was just a mean cuss.
Yeah, so, and the problem is a lot of people just, you know, depend on the zero on the record, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like you look at a guy like Bob Foster, and he wouldn't lose it light heavyweight. He was just destroying people. If he touched you, you were Bob Foster was a murderer. And then he would say, you know what, though? You know, my light heavyweight title is not on the line. I'm going to go and fight Joe Frazier. I'm going to go fight Muhammad Ali and get the shit beat out of him. And he come back and beat the hell out of everybody at light heavyweight, you know? So was he smart for doing that? Probably not. But maybe, because they were huge paydays, you know? But right. if people look at Bob Foster that are casuals, they go, oh, the guy that lost to Ali and Frazier. No, it was the guy who dominated, who would decapitate anybody at light heavyweight for this amount of time, you know? So, yeah.
People, that's the problem sometimes with BoxRec. They just skim through it and they look at the win-loss, they look at the names, but they don't really know the story behind it. And so,
And when you just look at the names, you don't know what point in that person's career that name was. You go, oh, they beat this guy, that guy, that guy. It's like, yeah, that's when the guy was getting knocked out every five, you know, fights, you know, every few fights. You know, that's when the guy lost his passion. This guy fought him at this time in his career, and this guy fought him when he was like undefeated, and this guy fought him, you know. So you also got to look at, it's the name isn't the name. Like, if you beat like look at the Canelo fight coming up.
Yeah, if you beat Shane Mosley when Canelo beat him, let's say. Yeah, that's past it, Shane Mosley. You know, as opposed to like when Vernon Forrest beat Shane Mosley. Those are two different guys. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're looking at the same name, two different times, two different, divisions. So I understand what you're saying. 100%. I agree. And a lot of that's the argument against Floyd.
Joe Louis versus Rocky Marciano, you know?
Exactly. Oh, Joe Louis. Larry Holmes. He couldn't. Yeah.
Larry Holmes is one of my favorites, but when he beat Muhammad Ali, it wasn't Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. Or Tyson versus Larry Holmes, you know, it is what it is, you know. They're not the same fighter, you know.
Exactly, so exactly.
You got the name on the record, but it ain't the fighter, you know.
100%, man. Stuff. I got to ask you, too, regarding boxing and hip-hop, because there's such a history between the two. Obviously, you mentioned some, you know, even video games you've been on, WWE, the Tony Hawk stuff. There's a new boxing game coming out where I forget they have a studio that's in charge of like the music and stuff like that. I'm putting a petition out now. There needs to be an RA, the Rugged Man song on that. It's called ESBC Boxing. Supposed to have like a roster of over 100, supposed to be the best game ever. I don't know if you're in tune with the video games and stuff like that, or if you've ever been, you know, interested in doing soundtrack music for a boxing game.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm my own manager, so if you have a connection with the video game, give them a call, say, yo, you need RA the Rugged Man, I'll give you my finder's fee percentage and I'll do the song.
Yo, 100%. I'm gonna put that clip out, we'll put it on, and I'm gonna tag Todd Grisham, who works with the folks over there, and he's on DAZN as well. So yeah, if we could get you on there.
It's a DAZN game.
It's not a DAZN game, but Todd Grisham is one of the play-by-play guys that does DAZN, but he's one of the voices on the game, and he's kind of come along now. So, I mean, they've signed, you know, like I said, over 100 licensed boxers. They've got classic guys, everyone from Ali to Jack Johnson to present-day guys, Ryan Garcia, Canelo. So, the you know, the amount of roster, amount of people that they have is incredible, so.
They hit me up because they were having Cambosis Lopez in New York.
Yeah.
So they wanted a New York accent. So they contacted me to do a voiceover.
Really?
So I did some of the promos for the Cambosis Lopez fight. That was fun. You know,
that's like, dope.
You know, these are the dark days of this and that, you know. My bassy voice. So yeah. They came out dope. They were dope little, you know, and they paid me. It was dope, you know.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and check that out. I wasn't aware of that. So now moving forward, as far as you know, tours and festivals and whatnot, kind of doing shows, where are you at right now? It's always a crazy time to ask that because it's like, you know, we're pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, now it's coming back. Like, where do you stand at in terms of touring and what you're doing with music?
Before the tour, I used to just take every show, you know? I mean, before the pandemic, because, you know, hey, if you do 150 shows in a year, regardless, you know, it's going to add up to a lot of money, you know? But you're beating your body up. Your kids aren't seeing you as much. And it's not that easy, you know? It's really putting... So I said, you know, you got to stop selling yourself short because people less known than you are doing less shows and making more money because they're doing less shows. So now when somebody comes to me with a fee and I don't like it, I don't take it, you know, like, you know, it, obviously if it was super low, I wouldn't take it, but like, I have to, I said, no, we gotta hit this point before I leave the house and go to your country or go to your city. It has to make sense.
Okay.
So, you know, every year before the pandemic, I do 120 shows, 80 shows, 150 shows, you know, like it was like, you know, buy me in bulk type of thing. But now we're putting together a tour for Europe right now. And I told my agent, I said, nah, you know, I know you like to make a big 30, 40 dates, but they got to all be the right amount of cash to make it make sense. And then I'll do it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, so I'm figuring out my tour for October in Europe, and then we're going to figure out, I want to hit Canada, I want to hit Australia, but it's all got to make sense now, you know. Yeah. I'm not at the age where I should be beating my body up and not being with my children, you know.
So. Definitely. I told Immortal Technique my dream roundtable to talk some boxing and hip-hop shit would be you, him, and Vinny. So one day, if we can get that going, I'll throw a cast out there to Vinny Paz as well, and we'll try to get
you guys. We didn't talk that much boxing today, though.
We didn't. But I wanted to ask you, too, one thing is if you could, and I asked Tech the same thing, if you could walk a fighter out historically, all time, now.
Oh, later, Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes.
I didn't even get the question out. The Eastern Assassin. All right. So that would be the guy that you would walk out.
And then, you know, and then you want to go for the greatest that ever did it with Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, I walk, you know, maybe pull up in the pink Cadillac, walk out the car. You know,
that's why I said the visuals, man. RA is a visual guy. So I could already see that popping up. That's crazy.
Oh, Macho Camacho. Nah. Let's go out with Macho Camacho.
Oh, we're talking New York. My favorite
fighter. Prime. Great fighter when he was on, you know. But he was in the 80s, you know, being an athlete in the 80s, and he was a party animal. So,
That's what I'm saying.
I even know older guys be like, yo, we used to be at the strip club, and he'd be snorting cocaine off his muscles in the bathroom. And, you know, but he was a party animal. So he never hit his full potential, but he was super speed lightning. But why I'm saying I go out with him, because he had the greatest, you know, when he walked out, you know, it was like a show.
That was a show.
How's he gonna come out today? You know, James Tony one time was talking about a dude. What was his name again? I don't want to get his name wrong. Was it Vampire Johnson? Was that, you remember that guy? He used to come out in a coffin. Vampire. I might have a Vampire. I think it's Vampire Johnson.
Okay,
I
have to look.
If I'm wrong. I know all the non-casuals go, but I already don't know what he's talking about. It's Vampire Jones.
You
know?
Right, yeah.
I think it's Vampire Johnson.
Okay, that's hilarious. Yeah, man. Well, in terms of what you've been following, like, you know, nowadays, I mean, who are some of the fighters that you follow? Well,
I liked the Kambosos fight, you know, the upset against Lopez. I was really like, wow, I didn't expect that. And then... I like seeing Haney, you know, put up a clinic, and I like Kambosos too. So, you know, but Haney, you know, put on a clinic. And also, I never know how to say his name, but the scariest guy is how you say his name? Une from Japan?
In a way.
Yeah. I was there in Japan for the first fight. I was there live. It was right before COVID, and there was 20,000 screaming fans, and that was the best fight of the year that I saw that year.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I was there live watching it, and Nonito was so impressive. you know, and all he wanted was this rematch. He's like,
he just
wanted it. And this is, he felt so bad when he didn't win the fight the first time. Like, he was like, I apologized, guys. I tried my best. He felt so bad. Everybody in his entourage, like, that he didn't win it. I was like, oh, this guy, man. Like, yo, you fought your heart out. But then, you know, your body hits a certain age and you're in there with a monster. And that's what the sport is sometimes, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, for sure, man. And shout out to Nonito. He's a
great guy. Hall of Famer. And shout out to his wife, too. And shout out to Jin. You know, Jin Mosley is the one who introduced me to Nonito and his wife and their crew. And Jin is like, they badmouthed her because she was a hard, you know, she was hardcore, you know. So they badmouthed her because she was a, you know, she stuck to her beliefs. So I seen a lot of, you know, bad mouthing about Jin. But Jin grew up near me and knows a lot of people I grew up with. And we're pretty close. We're actually really close, me and Jin. So, yeah.
That's dope.
Oh, shout out to John Scully, Iceman. Who's the great fighter, the Russian guy?
Is it Beterbiev? I think
Beterbiev. That's who it is.
He's with Beterbiev.
All right.
Because he said something to in regards to what Joe Smith had said, basically like a shaky mindset going into that fight. Yeah, Beterbiev is a scary dude.
Thank you for listening to the RBR Recap. Make sure to follow us on social media at RBR Recap and visit RBRRecap.com for the latest episodes.